time for us to talk health, and World Autism Day takes place every year on the 2nd of April. It's an internationally recognized day. It encourages member states of the UN to take measures to raise awareness about autism and people on the autism spectrum throughout the world. There's still quite a lot of misconceptions and ignorance and stigma around autism in South Africa, but also seemingly very limited resources and support for those on the spectrum. So to try and make sense of these issues, we are joined by our resident GP and the CEO of Proactive Health Solutions, Dr. Fundile Nyathi. Dr. Nyathi, as always, it's great to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Cooks, and good morning to all of the 702 listeners.
As always, it's good to have you on the show. So this week, we're talking about autism spectrum disorder, because, of course, this week, on the 2nd of April, it was World Autism Awareness Day. And so when we speak about autism spectrum disorder, what are we talking about, Dr. Nyathi?
So we are speaking about, a complex range or group of, of disorders whose primary how do I put this now? It's a complex range of disorders, that are related to problems that happened in the development of the brain, usually at the time when the baby was still, inside the mom, that is during pregnancy, or that which happened during delivery. So that's what we are talking about. It's basically a condition relating to brain development, which impacts how a person perceives or socializes with others. It causes problems in social interaction and communication. And also there may be limited and repetitive behaviors, patterns of behavior. Also other wide range of symptoms. So there's no two people who are suffering from autism spectrum disorder who actually present with exactly the same kind of, of symptoms. So, for example, just to go deeper, I've mentioned that, these children, because it's a disorder that is normally diagnosed within the first 3 years of life. Other kids may have the first year of life, everything is normal. And then around 18 months, 24 months, they start to exhibit the symptoms. But the majority of the kids, they're normally, picked up in that first year. So they've got challenges with social communication and interaction. For example, they may fail to respond to their names or do not appear to hear when people are talking to them. They may resist a cuddling or holding, prefer to play alone. They may have poor eye contact. They may not speak or have delayed speech. They may not start conversations. Sometimes they may have abnormal tone or rhythm. They may have repeat words or phrases. They may not appear to understand simple questions. They don't express emotions. So that is, some of the symptoms as far as social communication and interaction is concerned. And as far as patterns of behavior, they may perform repetitive movements like rocking or spinning or hand flapping, perform activities that could cause self-harm like biting themselves or head banging. They may have specific routines or rituals and become disturbed at the slightest change. They may have problems with coordination and odd movements of patterns. They may be fascinated by details of an object, such as spinning wheels of a toy or a car. So these are just some of the presentations that these kids may present with. And because I mentioned that the underlying problem, it's a neurodevelopmental disorder. Mm-hmm. So it affects the functioning of their brain, which then presents in different ways. And these kids normally have challenges, what we call learning difficulties. So schooling becomes a problem. And as they get to be adults, issues relating to work may be, you know, a problem. So that's broadly what we are talking about when we're talking about autism spectrum disorder.
And just how common is autism spectrum disorder globally? What do we know about its prevalence in South Africa?
Books.
I was saying, Dr. Nyathi, how common is autism spectrum disorder globally? And what do we know about its prevalence in South Africa?
All right. So in terms of the global picture, you know, the different researchers, you know, they estimate that it's around 2%, you know, of the world population, about 2% of the world population. But there's obviously a variation from country to country. Some countries tend to have more of the prevalence compared to other countries. Sometimes within the same country, like for example, in the US, the state of California seems to have a higher prevalence compared to the other states. Now, coming to South Africa, like many other, you know, countries in the world, don't have the exact, you know, the exact prevalence in, you know, in terms of people who are having autism spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of research is taking place. There is a center for autism, you know, research that is based at the at UCT in Cape Town that is doing great work in this space. So I think in the near future we will, you know, be able to have a much more clearer picture. But what is clear though is that worldwide this you know, group of conditions is actually growing. In the 70s it was 1 in 2,000, you know, births. Now you know, in 2018 it was 1 in 44. In 2000 it was 1 in 150. So as you can see, 1 in 2,000, that was in the 70s, 1 in 150 around 2000, and now we're talking 1 in 44 you know, in 2018. So definitely this is a growing you know, kind of a challenge, a public health challenge, and it is something that definitely needs more resources in terms of research so that there could be better interventions in terms of managing and supporting people who are living with ASD.
And because we are speaking about, you know, we're speaking about not just one particular condition, but a spectrum. What does it mean when we speak of a spectrum? How do we make sense of that?
Basically, what we are saying was in the past, you know, as the medical community, we used to see these as separate, you know, kind of conditions. I mentioned that no two cases are the same in terms of presentation. But in the past, we would say there's this one with autism. This one has got Asperger's, you know, syndrome. You know, this one has got, you know, disintegrative disorder, childhood disintegrative disorder, and all of that. So we used to see them as separate kind of conditions. But the current thinking is that it's a spectrum. So the difficulties or the areas of the brain that are affected, there's a range of different parts of the brain, you know, that were affected at that developmental stage. Hence, we use the word, you know, the spectrum, because rather than seeing these as separate conditions, these are conditions that depend on the part of the brain that has been affected, and in terms of severity, how much of that part of the brain has been affected, and therefore the different presentations, but of the same spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Do we know anything about the causes of ASD? Can it be hereditary? I know many, many years ago, most famously, there was that story, and I forget the celeb who went on the show and claimed that the MMR vaccine had given her son autism. That that then spread and has become, you know, one of the reasons people have avoided, in particular, the MMR vaccine was because of that story. But do we actually know what the truth is about the causes of autism spectrum disorder and whether there's a genetic link?
Well, one thing that is very clear is that, you know, there is a genetic link. Because what has been found by researchers in the past is that if there is a sibling who already has the autism spectrum disorder, the chances of another sibling getting, you know, or presenting with that are much higher, somewhere around 40%. So clearly there is a genetic link. But in terms of other causes, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes problems, especially during delivery or the latter part of the pregnancy, or during delivery, where there could be some birth difficulties and some, you know, deprivation of oxygen supply to the brain, that could also result, you know, in somebody presenting with autism spectrum disorders. But like I said earlier, there's still a lot of research that's going on to actually better understand this group of neurodevelopmental, you know, health challenges.
Mm. A WhatsApp message asks, morning, Gogs, can Dr. Nyati concur that some autistic people can have high intelligence in spite of autism affecting the brain? Thanks. That's from Anonymous on our WhatsApp.
Yes. Before I answer that question, Gogs, let me answer that question. One of the, you know, problems that, you know, people don't have much awareness or knowledge about this particular condition. And there's a lot of stigma that is associated with this range of conditions. Now, one of those is that people assume that all people with autism spectrum disorder have got, you know, intellectual disabilities. The truth is that about 44% of people with autism spectrum disorder have got average or above average level of intellect. And only about a third, about 31% of these people with autism spectrum disorder actually have, intellectual disabilities. So it is a very important question that the listener asked, because 44% is a significant percentage. That is people with, you know, average or even above average. Some of them are extremely brilliant. Rather than looking at them as people with disabilities, the approach is to say, can we look at what are the unique talents and gifts? Because quite a number of these people who have got average or above average level of intellect have actually extreme talents and can be very, very useful, you know, especially, say, in the technology, you know, in the technology space and in other spaces. So it is important to recognize that many people with autism spectrum disorder are high-functioning individuals who some of them may not even need to go to special schools, because 90% of people with autism spectrum disorders, they do go to special schools, mm-hmm. but there is that 10% of people who actually go to mainstream schools and they do well. So I think that's the answer I can give to the listener.
Mary on WhatsApp asks, can a baby's 6-week injections cause autism? Is there any relationship between the two?
This is something that you mentioned a little earlier, to say there was this myth. I must say it was a myth. Yes, it got attention because a celebrity was involved, but a lot of research went into trying to see whether there's any merit to that allegation that this was related to the vaccinations, you know, the childhood immunizations. And after a long time of research being, you know, conducted, looking at those claims, there was no evidence to support that childhood immunization does lead to autism spectrum disorder. So that is basically fake news.
And Dr. Nyati, you mentioned that in most cases, about 90% of cases, particularly in children, they can in fact go to, I guess, normal schools or schools that aren't special needs or particularly geared towards supporting them. But if your child has now been diagnosed, can it be cured? What treatment options are available? Is it a lifelong condition that simply would need management and support? What happens after diagnosis?
So I just want to correct something that you just mentioned, Gooks. I mentioned that 90% do have to go to special schools.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But 10% actually thrive in normal schools. So I just wanted to correct that.
Okay.
All right. What was the question?
Once your child has been diagnosed, what kind of support do they need? So for instance, in this sense, I guess they would be the need and access to a school. They'd be, I imagine, yes, need to health professionals. Would you need speech therapists? Is there any need for, yes, medication, for instance? Is it the kind of condition that is not curable, but one that you need to manage throughout the length of your life?
Right. So, yes, it is a lifelong, condition. I think that's important to mention that. It's a lifelong condition. And people are encouraged to when they see something that does not look like, you know, the normal milestones in the development of the child, they are encouraged to be able to go and see if, this diagnosis can be excluded or confirmed, because the earlier the interventions, the better it is in terms of that child. Now, from a treatment point of view, there is no cure. There is no cure because there is the damage that has taken place already in the brain cells, and there is no tablet that you are going to give or an injection that will reverse that. However, having said that, this is a condition that is manageable. So you mentioned occupational therapists. Yes, occupational therapists play a very big role in assisting these kids, as they grow, getting to school and getting to be adults. Issues relating to structure, they need structure in their lives. They need a routine in their lives, and also issues relating to managing the external sensory stimulation. Therapies, speech therapies, OTs, working closely obviously with the pediatricians, helps these kids, and also obviously because they learn differently, they do learn and learn effectively, but they learn differently. It is important to understand that for them to actually learn effectively, they need to be in a special environment that understands how they get to learn. So those are just some of the important things that we need to understand. So it is a manageable condition. The earlier the management starts, the better the outcomes. But we must also recognize that some of them are highly functional and they may not need much in terms of support.
Dr. Nyati, as always, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Cooks, and all the best for the rest of the show.
Thank you very much. That's our resident GP and the CEO of Proactive Health Solutions, Dr. Fundile Nyati. If there's a question you'd like for us to have a look at in our health feature, send me an email at gugs@702.co.za. That's GUGS@702.co.za.